Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Morgan Lee, encouraging going out into the real world to make relationships.
Shockingly, you're not really meeting people in your living room, which requires someone to, like, you need to be in a relationship with a person to, for them to generally be in your home. So as people decide to, like, invest more in their homes and less in places outside of that, it becomes harder just to connect with people in general.
Morgan Lee next. No fan of online dating, but hoping for a serious relationship, Morgan Lee is positive about a new trend she's observing, which is get outside, put down your phone, and meet someone out there in the real world. Spencer Dahlke is with Morgan Lee, Global Managing Editor at Christianity Today. Her recent article is Going Outside Hasn't Found Me My Person. Getting off apps is still important for my Christian witness.
We'll put this topic on your mind.
Essentially, I'm someone that has used Twitter for a very, very long time. It, for years, was my favorite social media platform. And as many people know, it's kind of become X. And with its name change, owner change, there's also been some changes to the type of content that I receive on the site. In fact, there's a lot of, if women just understood this, my life would be better. Men just understood this. If people just got this, lots of, like, angst, I guess, about gender that comes out a lot on X these days. A lot of people who are trying to, you know, figure out what the magic bullet is to accelerate their dating life or make it better because, you know, the opposite gender is just the worst. And one of those promises that I have seen, or I guess you could say advice that people throw out there, like, this is really going to change everything, is if you just delete all the dating apps because they're so terrible anyway. And I know you talked to my colleague recently about that. And obviously you and I both know people who are married from dating apps, but it's like, just delete all the dating apps and just join a club, start a hobby, be in a running group, etc. And I wanted to comment on this because I'm someone who has relatively eschewed dating apps over the course of my 20s and 30s and is involved in many things and has not found romantic success in those activities. But I still think it's really good to, like, not just be inside scrolling and hoping that your person comes that way. So because I had an experience where I'm like, I endorse this advice, but not for the reasons that you might think, I wanted to comment on that.
I talked to Harvest Prude not too long ago. One of the questions I asked her, and I guess I'll put you the same question, why are they sort of vanishing from these in-person places?
So one thing that dating apps do right away is they establish that you want to date and I want to date. That in between knowing if someone wants to go on a date with you and them not, can feel colossal, right? It, like, feels colossal when you know someone in real life. And for years, we kind of just kind of figured out how to get over that colossal thing. Some people even get really good at it. They just are fine coming up to strangers. I don't know if anyone's that amazing about moving someone from the friend zone to the dating zone, but there are ways that you can, if you're someone that kind of gets used to a certain level of, like, oh, it could be rejected, whatever, you just do it. Dating apps, right? There's this immediate understanding that if you and the other person have both swiped on each other, you both want to go on that type of date. And it gives a certain level of, like, clarity and takes away one of these, like, very vulnerable steps that you have to do. So because humans generally, like, dislike discomfort, I'm not really surprised that this one particular thing that solves for the act of putting yourself out there, I think I touched on this in the article, we're often, like, very motivated by convenience. I'm not really surprised that people might want to go that route. And then in a situation in real life where you're, like, connecting with someone or thinking about going up with someone, but you're, like, kind of feeling anxious about that conversation, you don't do that.
Speaking of convenience, I know you mentioned, wrote a little bit in your article that the prioritization of convenience in our culture has kind of resulted in the loss of third spaces. I think I might be able to guess kind of what you mean by, like, the third spaces, but could you define that for us?
These are places where people are out and about, and it's not like your home where you're just kind of hanging out. And it's a place where you are living your life, doing something that you probably could have done at home or increasingly can do at home. And now you're actively making a choice. So coffee shops are, like, the typical example, right? Many people who drink coffee can make coffee at home. Maybe they can't make a drink as elaborate, but they can usually generally make it at home. They can probably pull up their laptop at home or read a book at home or have a conversation at home, but they are actually having it somewhere else. And so these are places that generally, it's a big reason why people like cities is because cities have a lot of these. Cities might have a lot of coffee shops, a lot of restaurants, a lot of parks. And as we spend more of our disposable income on recreating the experience, we are not investing in third spaces in the same way, right? So I mentioned that you could probably make coffee at home, right? But like, think about people who've spent hundreds of dollars on actual equipment to help them make that drink that before maybe only a business would have invested in. Or I've heard from many sports fans like, oh, why do I want to go to the game and I have to pay for parking? I have to pay for the ticket. I can't even see. You know, they list all these particular things when I can have this amazing sound system in my house and, you know, just watch it on my TV at home in my amazing man cave. So that is one of the things that comes out there because shockingly, you're not really meeting people in your living room, which requires someone to like, even to be in a relationship with a person to for them to generally be in your home. So as people decide to like invest more in their homes and less in places outside of that, it becomes harder just to connect with people in general.
Have you had much experience with city life and country life?
Country life, no. City okay. life, yes.
City life supposedly has a lot more to offer when it comes to third spaces. Country life, maybe not so much, but I've always gotten the impression that people out in the country maybe feel a lot more familiar with each other than people mm-hmm. in the city. If you know anything about that, like, is there anything we can learn from that?
I cannot comment a lot on American country life other than to say that I think anyone who's been part of a small community knows that it's easier to meet and know people in small communities. So maybe some of us that are in a suburban or city life still go to a small church. Obviously easier to meet people at a small church or going to a smaller school. Some of those communities within communities, right, are like that. One thing that I found really interesting, though, is I do think that rural communities are challenged in many ways because things are so far away from each other. And so you end up crossing a huge distance. And so I don't feel exactly comfortable commenting on how this plays out in a U.S. context where almost everyone has cars. But to the extent when everyone's on their feet and walking around, you run into people all the time. I've had a chance, as you mentioned in the beginning, I work on the global team at Christianity Today. And so I was in Uganda and there's still significant parts of Uganda where people are on their feet. The majority of Ugandans walk everywhere. And so you run into people frequently. You see people that you know frequently. You stop frequently. That's just a reality that when you're in a car, you might wave to someone going by, but it's going to be a little bit of a different feeling. So I do think it's less of rural and more of maybe like a place where there's a slower pace of life. Communities sometimes have that characteristic and that makes it easier for people to connect with each other.
I know you mentioned technology does make our lives more convenient. And in a lot of ways, it's really good. We don't want to be like Luddites, obviously, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is a balance using technology to build relationships? Do you think it's harmful for our humanity to like outsource it to dating apps and these sorts of things?
There's so many aspects of technology that we can get into. I was on this dating coach's website yesterday and she was fielding a question about someone who was replying to an opening message on a dating app. And I guess they'd asked ChatGPT how to respond to that. So, you know, like that's levels of technology, right? We're not just talking about dating apps. We're also talking about using AI in that type of situation. And so there's obviously a really broad scope of things. You know, you wouldn't be surprised from reading my article that I think that it's best when we use technology to help us actually do something with other people, right? Like, do I think it's bad that Ticketmaster has an app so that I can buy tickets to go to a game? No, I don't think it's bad that Ticketmaster does that. And I think that the fundamental idea behind dating apps was kind of similar too. It was like, okay, what if we like found a bunch of people who currently don't cross paths with each other and we help them cross paths with each other and they can get to know each other in real life, right? Like, people are out there looking for love. We're going to help them broaden the dating pool and so forth. So I think in theory, I'm like very much a fan of dating apps. And it's only the past couple of years or so that we like start to think about like the larger effects that something like a dating app would have. I do see that as like distinct though from like having a Walmart app or any type of like grocery store app. I do see it's different than like Amazon Prime. You know, these are apps that are often designed for, I don't want to come in and see anyone. Grubhub and similar apps, I don't even want to go to the restaurant. Yeah, I definitely am someone that's opting down on technology that says, okay, we're going to promise to like cater to you in your own house. And that's the most important thing. Dating apps, again, are interesting because it's trying to use technology to help people meet with other people, right? Like that is the alleged goal of them. Obviously, many jaded users have said, I actually think that they're just trying to help me stand here forever. Like this is not their actual goal to help me get out there. Which I can understand why people feel that way. And of course, I think we can think of other ways in which dating apps have been very challenging, maybe like overwhelming people with choices, making it more challenging for people to make decisions because they constantly believe there's something else out there. I think there's like the paradox of choice stuff where you think you're going to be happier with tons of options, but instead it just makes you more miserable. Not to mention the fact that like, I don't know if you, how much you swipe or how much you've swiped on someone else's account, because sometimes people will just be like, hey, just swipe for me. But you know, people can make all types of insane remarks about the people that they're swiping past who are actually literally people, but we start to treat them as a little bit less of people just because there's like an abundance of options and we're not interested in evaluating them all as individual people.
You do talk about going outside as a way to maybe find more relationships and connect better. And could one say nourish one's soul by going outside? What is it about going outside that you think particularly helps us, I guess, as human beings take up our cross and put ourselves to death?
So I want to just be clear with listeners that there's two ways in which going outside is defined. The first one is being in nature. And then the internet version of going outside just means like leaving the screens behind, I would say. So it can encompass a lot of things that don't actually involve being in nature, but can instead refer to some of the stuff that we talked about earlier with third spaces. So in this context, going to an inside coffee shop also counts as going outside. Increasingly, when you're making these types of decisions, the reason you're leaving your screen is because you're trying to interact with other people, right? And generally, spending time with friends, spending time with people of a different generation, whether it's, you know, hanging out with children or hanging out with older people, or if there's older people listening to the show, hanging out with millennials or Gen Z, there's lots of different ways in which you're going to be interacting with people who are different than you and hopefully giving you a different perspective of what your life is like. For many of us millennials right now, one of the best ways to deal with our own stress is to talk to people who are not our generation, right? Like if you talk to people who are much older than you, they have perspective that they can offer you. They can reframe some of what your circumstances. They can tell you what they think is really important about what you're dealing with and what's also not important. And if you're talking to kids, there might be a joy that you're able to have vicariously through them or with them and just play with them. You know, for kids are just not as weighed down by things. We do have to leave our screens behind to kind of interact with people who are in different life stages. I also think the stuff I mentioned earlier, we often think like the more that we can kind of like control our life or we can trust algorithms to control our life, it'll somehow enhance it in some way. Many of us really just don't like surprises, aren't flexible to things changing. And at the same time, it's that ability to not control things that often leads us to moments of delight, to moments of joy. I am in Chicago right now where I lived for a very long time. And last week I got caught in a rainstorm riding my bike, which is horribly inconvenient and also a great memory that my friend and I who we're with have now told multiple people about, right? Like, if I can pick to bike on a night when it's pouring rain or when it's dry, probably I'm going to pick dry most of the time. But I don't wish back this memory that I had with my friend, which we will talk about for a really long time, as we recounted to some other friends a couple weeks ago. And then we brought up some other memorable bike rides. So also when there's things that are challenging and that we're presented with, I also think that gives us a chance to really like understand ourselves better. Most people aren't thinking like, oh yeah, I really want to be caught in this uncomfortable situation when I'm pumping gas, for instance, or when I'm just trying to like walk to the grocery store. I'm not looking for something that's going to disrupt it. And so we throw on our AirPods and we kind of burrow into our world. But when there are opportunities to do something about it, it can be a welcome break from thinking about ourselves all the time and an opportunity to say, like, do I actually act like a kind person or a considerate person? Or am I someone that is just kind of inclined to think about themselves all the time?
Do you think the online craze has affected the church at all?
I mean, I have yet to go to a church in the 21st century that no one owned a smartphone. Obviously, there was a period of time before the iPhone invented and people had Palm Pilots and had pagers during that moment. You know, before I went to church, there were PowerPoint slides. I remember projectors having stuff. So I cannot personally myself think of a time in which either technology was used in the service and or the people that were there were using technology in some way. My least favorite example of this technology is thinking of like countdown clocks that some churches use to show the worship team how much time they have left to play songs and show the pastor how much time they have before they have to wrap up the sermon. Like, and obviously, like when it comes to worship and so forth, people have speaker systems, and I probably think there's way more technology than I'm even aware of that a lot of musicians are using. So one, it's all already there. We're all thinking it's somehow going to enhance the experience of the service for us. I go to a house church and we still use microphones, which is great because you still want to really hear people well. It doesn't really matter how big or small it is. It's annoying if you can't hear people. Of course, it's shaping us. I go on my phone during church. I don't like that about myself. So I've tried to bring like embroidery to do to distract myself from being on my phone. I'm on my phone at church. Lots of people are on their phone at church. Some people are great and they're reading the Bible on their phone at church. And some people are answering text messages and some people are doing both. So yes, I'm speaking of things that pertain to like the actual service itself, but I'm springing that to say that like there's some things that you'll think about like with Sunday morning behavior and the rest of the week behavior. So you won't see that type of behavior on a Sunday morning, even if people do it outside of that. But in church, like people are bringing all their same technology habits into church itself. So think about, there's really no like kind of like bifurcation or like, oh, as a Christian, I should probably leave my phone in the car. Or I think I can speak pretty broadly here that like American Christians, you know, rely on technology in the same way that any other American would. I don't really see a strong way in which I see more discipline or rigor or abstinence from technology than I would any other group.
What do you think the church can do to help encourage its congregants to seek real relationships and real experiences?
To be draconian at first, I've read so many articles about public school districts that are trying to ban phones. And I personally think it's a worthwhile question that churches should consider if phones should be banned during the service broadly. One thing that would be disappointing to me is imagine that you walk in during worship, you put your phone away, and then immediately after walking out of the service, you just grab your phone, stare at it, and don't talk to other people. But like literally, you would only be grabbing your phone on the way out of church. I mean, I do think that like recognizing that church is a huge place where people are socializing and building community. And I remember people texting discreetly in school growing up. From all that I hear from my teacher friends, you know, people who don't have really intense cell phone restrictions in their classrooms, kids have no problem just doing whatever they want on their phones these days. And again, I don't really think that adults are that much different when we have to sit still and so forth. Not only that, but if the students are having them during passing periods, they're not talking to each other. If they have them during lunch, they're not talking to each other. So I do think having a really like robust church experience without phones would be great. Most physical Bibles are really cheap. Like, I don't really think that like people are going to be missing out that much by having to read the Bible not on YouVersion. I think they can do quite okay. You know, some churches may even have leftover ones from when they used to have them in the pews all the time. So reminding people basically how good in-person community that has far fewer interruptions, that's a really great thing to do. My church, I mentioned earlier, it's a house church. We also have a meal together at the end. And so there's less of a sense that people just kind of like run off afterwards. And I do think that churches understand many ways that like food is important, but to the extent that you're able to have a regular rhythm of meals together, that's what's ideal, where people can just count on the fact that like there's always going to be lunch there and you can always hang out there. That's kind of like the lowest common denominator when it comes to these types of things. I have a lot of other opinions about this, but putting on events where you're going to very clearly think about how people are going to connect with each other is also good. So it's one thing to be like, okay, we're going to have a sports day, but it's another thing to think about like, how are we going to get people during the sports day to actually know each other in person? Are we going to use name tags? Are we going to have icebreakers? Are we going to put people on teams that they're going to hang out with the whole time? And like, we have a team captain, and that team captain is going to make sure everyone knows each other. One of my favorite books, which is not a Christian book, but it's a really helpful book to think through these things, it's called The Art of Gathering. The author, Priya Parker, she opens the book basically saying, like, we do like to be together, but so many in-person events are really bad. And you can think about how many times people avoid particular things because they're like, I hate small talk. Like, this is so tedious and stupid. Or I actively avoid doing this because I come here and nobody talks to me, right? Or feeling like you just can't get any traction with people. Like, no one wants to follow up with you. So being really thoughtful about how the events that you're going to throw as a church are going to be actual catalysts for people to build connection at them, and not just be something that you've been doing forever and you kind of just like hope, you know, by osmosis that everyone becomes friends with each other. Not to be like, churches, you need to do this, but it just seems like when we think about like practicing hospitality with people, it's like really being self-critical about what makes an event welcoming and hospitable and what still is going to feel like uncomfortable for people to go to.
I don't know if you've read Rosaria Butterfield at all, but she mentions that hospitality is a great way to advance the gospel. I guess to that point, how would you rate the church practicing hospitality?
There's obviously, it's like a enormous question to answer and depends on who we're talking about. But this is actually a huge reason why I go to house churches, because they're one of the like most consistently hospitable places that I've seen, because to go back to one of our earlier points, they're just a lot smaller. And so people can know pretty early on if you are new or not. And it's very helpful when you are someone who is single to say like, oh, where am I going to sit? I guess I'm going to sit on this pew, on this folding chair, kind of in the back row, two seats away from someone that is sitting next to me, right? Like, you don't feel like comfortable like sitting right next to someone else, right? In a house church, there's just not a lot of space. You kind of like don't have a lot of options but to just sit in a seat. And if it's right next to someone, yeah, you're going to like sit in that seat because that's the seat that's open and you're not going to like think a bazillion things about it. And then afterwards, most often the person next to you is going to be like, oh, I don't know you. What's your name? Or between music and teaching, the pastor's going to be like, okay, you can go walk over and get coffee and you could eat throughout the service and so forth if you want to. I think that our pastor at my church, he does a really good job of like approaching people who he hasn't seen before and saying hi and engaging them in conversation. And why is he able to do that? Well, because he can see every single person at the church. And so he can decide like, oh, I haven't seen this person before. And, you know, it is his job to say hi to people. Plus, most people feel more at home in a home than in a room that's designed for a lot of people. So all those things help to kind of reinforce this sense of like, oh, you should feel welcomed. Oh, you should stay longer. In homes, people often linger. They're not just like heading right out. Yeah, I don't want to be like, oh, every church has to be like that in order to do that. But I do get frustrated when I see so many churches not think that Sunday morning is going to be the time or place where people are going to build connections, right? Like, I don't know what church you go to, but I've been to churches where someone comes up, good morning. If you're new, go to the visitor's booth. Why do I have to go to the visitor's booth? Why isn't it ingrained in the church's DNA that they like turn to me and they say, how long have you been coming here? Would you like to come to this thing with me this week? It's so great to have you. There's so much like stuff that's so formalized in these bigger places. I don't know. To me, is the goal to like meet people? Why is like none of those things have actually resulted in you actually like connecting? I'm not talking about like someone who's a volunteer in a formal position. So I don't know. That's not how I would do things if I were hosting stuff. And I would really love for there to be like places and spaces for like connection with people that you could imagine yourself being friends with. And I do think that when a church becomes so kind of formalized in all these different roles that people have in departments and buildings and so forth, it can end up leaving you, in my experience, feeling very cold. You know, you don't really feel like anyone's there actually to connect and so forth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's a lot to consider there, I'm sure. Like, that could be like another whole discussion. But maybe one last question to just throw out there too. Thinking about this topic about building relationships mm-hmm. and technology, how has that shaped your view of the gospel?
I think that obviously the thrust of the gospels is Jesus having interactions with lots of different types of people. Some of them are in houses. Some of them are outside. Some of them are on boats and so forth. When I talk to people about Christianity, I'm like, well, kind of the main point about being a Christian is that, like, God really wanted to come to earth. God wanted to be here with us. I don't really think of the rest of other religions as making that claim where, like, God wants to be with us. And that belief in the incarnation of in-person communication and interaction is definitely my favorite part of what we're believing when I would consider like the whole kind of like story of salvation is that we have this God that values in-person interaction and is not just saying, I'll love you in my God way from afar, but like, it's like, okay, so I want to be part of this so bad, so I'll actually become human and all of that entails. Then God, as a human, loves a very tactile human experience. You can think about that time where Jesus performs a miracle and he like spits on the ground and he like puts that on someone's eyes, right? Like there's the sense in which Jesus is very like in the actual spaces that he's in. And he's not just kind of ascended to this place where he's getting reports of other things or other people, you know, like he heals the lepers, right? He's in places where there's people who are sick, where there are children and where there's commotion happening and where you can like feel the dust, you know, we talk about like washing people's feet, right? Like you can think about all these interactions that Jesus had that are so tactile. So it's really great that we're not just saying like practice hospitality in a theoretical way in which we are looking at like, you know, God does love us, but you know, we can kind of love like God and God loves from afar, intervening at a distance. But instead we have a God who really wants to be in the same space with us.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, journalist Morgan Lee. To read her piece, Going Outside Hasn't Found Me My Person, Getting Off Apps is Still Important for My Christian Witness, go to ChristianityToday.com. Tomorrow on His People, Seth Porch, reflecting on the fact God doesn't change and on His promise, I will be yours.
Why do we feel so unable to come to God in confidence? We're wavering. We feel badly about decisions we make. We feel badly about our sin. We wonder if maybe God still loves us. And when we're doing that, I think it's revealing that really we're considering our relationship with God in terms of our own capacity to keep to the faith in our own strength and not trusting ourselves to an unchanging God who calls us to repent towards Him, who calls us to walk in holiness and promises also to keep us. And that promise to keep again is based on this fact that he just doesn't change. He's the same.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.